I want to use a case in the Shiroku as the basis for our talk tonight. This is case number 98. And the actual case is very short. It goes like this. Attention, a monk asked Tozan, among the three bodies, which one does not fall into any category? And Tozan replied, as to this, I always take heed. Now, before we have a little discussion about it, about one aspect of it, we'll point out that the if you were really working on this koan, you'd have to respond to that question. It might be that you might give an alternative response to that which Tozan gave. You might really address this question among the three bodies, Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, and Nirmanakaya, which one does not fall into any category. In a sense, the monk asked a kind of, you might say, trick question. But Tozan might have seen in this monk an intellectual addiction, we might say. Otherwise, he might have answered in a different way. But his answer is very, very keen and very important. And he said, as to this matter, I always take heed. So, you may or may not know the three bodies, most of you do, I think, but just to say a little word about them. These are facets of our experience, and in one sense, they encompass everything. The Dharmakaya encompasses the experience of the one reality, that is to say the nirvanic side, where there are no differentiations, no distinctions. That which is revealed in a true Kensho experience, and in fact is a touchstone for a true Kensho experience. The Sambhogakaya represents, the Sambhogakaya and Nirmanakaya represent in a sense the encompassing of all our experienced life. The Sambhogakaya encompasses everything that we actually experience with our senses. The smells and tastes and touch and feels and sights and sounds and all the rest of it that we experience. And the Nirmanakaya represents the many ways in which we behave and take action in the world. And if you want to look at it that way, with respect to our life in our karmic life, that pretty well covers the whole thing. There's very little outside of the categories of what you experience and what you do. So that's a simple way of speaking of it, but it's a way that is not found too often in Buddhist literature. Buddhist literature makes it sound a little bit more recondite and etheric and a characteristic of the Buddha and so on, whereas I see all these as really characteristic and facts about the existence of everyone. That, of course, is facets of the Buddha, because that is the that is our fundamental nature. But now, here's this monk that comes, and he says, now, there are these three bodies, and there are many other categories, by the way, that you may or may not have known know about within Buddhism. There is the realm of form, the realm of the formless, the realm of desire. Then there is the six realms, the realm of the devas and the fighting ghosts, fighting demons, as we say, and the realm of the hungry ghosts and the realm of the hells, and the realm of the animal nature and the realm of the human nature. And then there are the 12 nidanas that represent the way in which dualism arises and gives rise to certain consequences in our It's kind of another encompassing of the whole of our life, just as the six realms are, in a sense, an encompassing of the whole of our life. And I believe that they should always be taken in that way. They are all comments about what we all share and what we all have to deal with, as it were, in our lives. They are not etheric and theoretical and everything. They have come about through the most of them have come about through the actual observation of the way the mind operates, what its antics are, what it does, actually, as we slow our minds down in the process of doing zazen. We can see what it does. We can learn a great deal about this mind of ours, which is, of course, the whole of our existence, because what we do externally is but a manifestation of what originates in the so-called mind. So, this question, this koan, is a very important one for us beings in dealing with the various categories of things that we have in our minds. For example, in the last few days there have been various articles written about various things that are illustrative of this. For example, the person that went on a shooting spree in Iraq, the persons who went on a shooting spree in Afghanistan, the person in our own country that went up to the top of a building and started shooting pedestrians down below, and many, many such categories of the kids that went into the high school and shot, and so on and so on. There are many categories that people look and they say, but he was such a nice young man. He was from a good family. He was married, had children, he did good service in the military. There's various things that the people will say about the person that indicate that it was a surprise for them that such an individual could have behaved in that manner. Now, the teaching of Buddhism is that there is nothing that is outside of us, really. We all have the elements of the six realms within us. We all have the elements of the three realms of form, formless, and desire within us. And we all, of course, participate in the three realms of Dharmakaya, Sambhogakaya, Nimanakaya, and Dharmakaya, of course, to the degree that we do what is necessary in order to encounter the Dharmakaya. But these are not characteristics and possibilities for certain people, but not of others. They are in all of us. And so likewise, we have to face that when folks do things that we don't expect, that are inhumane or murderous, or they become thieves, or they become exploiters of others, or they become perpetrators of fraud in companies, like we've heard a lot about in the last few years, and so on, or that they do things in order to make profit and ignore the effects of their profit-making upon the individuals that consume their products, and so on and so on. We need not, as is the case in many folks, to put these people in a certain category. Bad folks, or aberrant folks, or whatever. And this is a great danger for us. And when we hear Tozan saying, "In this matter I take heed," all of us have to take heed when we find ourselves categorizing ourselves as well. Things about ourselves, and saying that, this is not possible for me, or this is, I'm just not that kind of person, or that, I'm this other kind of person, and so on and so on. If we look into exactly what's behind all those statements, we see but a story that has been built, and a story that has been built by a familiar group of three mechanisms. And the mechanisms are generalization. We take certain examples, we string them together, and make of them a generality. We do this about other people, we do this about behavioral patterns, we do this about, and so on. And it comes out when we speak. There's two other things that have to be done in order to make these constructions. And this is true of us as human beings. Not just as some human beings, but all human beings have these mechanisms whereby they create a world that is a useful world for them to create, to navigate through the world that is theirs. The danger is that one be caught into equating it with the way things actually are. First is that this is a story that I create for my convenience in operating in the domain that is mine to operate in. And I realize fully its fallibility and its limitations and so on and so on. And so the other two things that people have to do to create such a story are a process that we could call selection or deletion, selection and deletion. There's two sides of the same coin. So we would select certain facts, certain things, certain observations, and we would delete all the other ones for the sake of producing a comfortable, convenient story that might suit our purposes of navigation or might suit our membership in the particular tribe in which we wish to belong to. And then the third one is distortion. So generalization, deletion or selection, and distortion. Distortion means that there may be some so-called data in the world, and we will say things like, that's not really how it is. How it really is that. When he said that, he didn't really mean that. What he meant was, and this is the activity of distortion. We have to utilize all three of those methods in order to create our worlds inside. The maps, the movies, and so on that we make. The filters that we have through which we see the world, that we project upon the world, and that distorts the world in ways that if we're with like-minded people, meaning those who have made a similar story, we don't notice it. It can easily become an agreement that that's the way the world is. Oh, I know what you mean, we say, when someone says something. Yes, that's how it is. These are all affirmations of a common story. Now, the reality of human beings is they're much more complicated and complex than that. And that complexity is sometimes explored by certain great novelists, explored by certain folks that try to eliminate from their minds for a while the filters of any stories that they might have acquired or made in order to explore what we might call the raw data of people's activities and lives in the world. And that's just how we are. That's our life as human beings. But remember Tozan. He says, in this regard, I take heed. And it's really a part of our ongoing practice in the world to take heed of the way this mind operates. Because what it does is it settles for a story about the world, a story about Buddhism, a story about practice, a story about other people, a story about ourselves, instead of going underneath and beyond all those stories and filters and conclusions to the actual raw data. That's why the foundation practice of Buddhism, including, of course, Zen, and especially in Zen, is the breath practice. The breath requires no story. There's nothing added to it. It has been with us from the time that we were born. It is intrinsic to us, as is the attentive mind. So joining the attentive mind with this autonomous function of the body, that is breath, is one of the most fundamental and powerful practices that we could have. And it is one of its extensions, as one's life of practice goes on, is towards shikantaza, which is turning this awareness to just the way it is at this moment, including breath, but also including everything that is sensorily experienced. And learning how to let go of all the tendencies of mind, to create some story about it, to criticize it, to comment on it, to affirm one's knowing of it or one's ignorance of it, to go beyond all of those commonplace activities that are so characteristic of human beings in the world. So when we do the practice, we are using something that is a wonderful autonomous gift, presence, or faculty of us human beings in order to deal with these universal tendencies of mind that in the past had a survival benefit. We don't need to go into that now, we've mentioned it a number of times, but all of these story-building things had a survival benefit, and not the least of which was to affirm one's membership in a certain tribe of those that held similar stories. And so it's not surprising that that it's been an observation during wartime that prisoners in dire circumstances, concentration camps and so on, will often take on the belief systems of their oppressors, their guardians, their whatever word you want to put on it, for survival, because they know how dangerous it is to affirm or manifest a belief, a story, and to have any activity that supports such a belief or story that runs counter to that which is held by your oppressors. It may certainly result in your death. So it's not surprising. People take heed, as it were. But we're talking here about taking heed of something else. Because we, when we're doing so, then we are not concerned with our survival. We are not concerned with the survival of an ego, of a self, of a story, of a tribal membership, of a Zen practitioner, or anything else. We are learning how to let all these things be. And so in a sense, we invite them in. And likewise, as we view the world, we view it through newspapers, through television, through Facebook, through wherever you look, you see the world manifesting itself. A common way of dealing with that is to select those things that are supportive of your own story, that give you pleasure, whatever it is, and to eliminate or push away those things that do not, that you don't like, which is a way of that they don't fit with your story about what you'd like the world to be and so on. And that, of course, is very human and very understandable and a manifestation of this great Buddha mind, strangely enough. Because the Buddha mind encompasses everything. But actually, if you're serious about being a full and deep and fully developed, realized human being, eventually, then it's important to accept all of these things as facets of what it is to be a human being and learn how to deal with it in the Zazen fashion. You learn about it, you recognize it, you acknowledge it. And then you watch the mind coming in to make a story about it, to make it a bad or good or the right thing, the wrong thing. And you watch how the mind will want to eliminate those that are different. There was an article today, actually, in the New York Times, which mentioned a study that was done, it turned out that 91% of the individuals who were probed about if they ever had thoughts of hurting, harming, murdering, killing someone, 91% of them said they had. These were good people. These were ordinary citizens, good people, whatever, people who had not gone out and shot people, and so on and so on. But it was an interesting revelation to the person who did the study that some of them really had detailed plans. They didn't carry through on them, but they had detailed plans of how they were going to do dire things to this one who betrayed them, or that one who was an ex-friend, or so on and so on, and how they were going to do it, and so on. They didn't carry it out. But having those thoughts, remember Jesus also emphasized the importance of the thoughts that we have as being likewise harmful to us. And we didn't want to use the word sin, because we don't use that term. But we could use this, we could speak of the same process as a violation of what is possible for a human being. And it's very easy, because in our early years, centuries ago and not so long ago, and certainly millennia ago, there was this big tendency within the evolutionary development of not only human beings, but also animals, between cooperation and decimation, you might say. And there's a lot of evidence now that a lot of the animals, we speak of animals because of their greater observability and conscious activities, as far as they have that conscious life, and they would sometimes cooperate for the benefit of others, and especially and for the benefit of their group. And then there were others who were in the extreme, the loners, who would go out there and become what has been known in the literature as nature red in tooth and claw. And so both of those tendencies are there, to be helpful and supportive of fellow beings and those that are for the destruction of those that are different from us, and different modes of survival, and so on and so on. We don't, not concerned here about such a, this process of creating another generalization, but there is nothing within human beings, and the more you learn about human beings, the more you learn about the so-called different qualities of human beings. That is to say, those that have various neuroses and those that have various psychoses, you really understand a great deal about that these are not different. These are merely spectral extremes, you might say, or temporary waves coming into the life of an individual. And they come from the same sources that we all share. And it's of course a fascinating way to observe, a way to conceptualize human beings, and to feel, I would say, great compassion for all beings. So that's in that category, the area in which we all fall heir to generalizing and find these generalities arising in our minds that come out as gossip and judgment, and as one of the precepts has it, to extol oneself and downgrade others. And these come out that way, and we should all remember, toes on, take heed. In this area, I take heed. Now he was speaking to this monk who had the world all clearly categorized, and maybe had invented this question that he thought would be a stumper for Tozan. the world seems to all be in these categories. What doesn't fall into these categories? What's outside it? And that's a question that if you were actually working on this koan, you would actually have to address. But Tozan spoke to an essential part of this monk's question, the part to which I've been referring in this talk, the part that people need to refer to if we are to create a more humane planet together here, to take heed as these generalities, generalizations, come into our being, and as these tendencies come in that we elaborate as a story, such as these 91% of these folks surveyed, they elaborated a story about that came out of a profound sense of the otherness of the individual about whom they were thinking, having these what do we call them? Hateful, negative thoughts, and so on, that sometimes erupt right into behavior, such as the ones I mentioned at the earlier part of the talk. Person going in the up on the top of the building, it's happened a couple of times in America now, and shooting at folks, none of whom he knew. They were just targets, target practice, as it were, but manifesting something in himself. And there were men, admittedly, that did this. Being so in the power of these stories, these thoughts, that everything else was blanked out. And part of it was there probably was not any practice, you might say, that would run counter to the being taken over, hypnotically, we might say, by these stories, as people are spending hours and hours daydreaming, as it were. They call it daydreaming. But these daydreams can turn into very dire thoughts as they narrow and as they narrow down the mind and have it focus on just a tiny interpretation of something that occurred in their life or that seems to be occurring outside. And we see that all in all manner of places. And so a practice is necessary, a practice of being aware of the tendency of the mind and all the tendencies of mind, being aware of them. As Tozan says, in this matter I take heed. And we need to take heed. That's essential for our practice. Otherwise we are in bondage. Fundamental endeavor of the practice of Zen is the release of us individuals from bondage and the release of us into what is called freedom. That is manifested or that is recognized all along the way as we do the practice, as we take heed, as we counter the automatic or hypnotic tendencies to identify with these stories and turn instead to a place of much bigger perspective where they are seen as merely these functions of what I've called the construction business of the mind, serving tribal membership and the existence and survival of the ego I. Now, this is an essential facet of our practice. It's not just sitting dumbly following the breath, but it is utilizing this wonderful attentive function of mind, turning it on the very functions, the very ancient functions of mind itself, and learning how not to be trapped by them. Learning how not to be a puppet to these tendencies that act as a puppeteer. And this is a great step towards becoming free, and I might say becoming more humane in the world. This is a profound tool for the transformation of the world. So a meditation that is presented to people as just good for you, and it's nice, you'll like it, and so on. And even that it'll make you more efficient at your job, it'll make you use time more effectively because you'll be able to concentrate better and so on, is not untrue, but it's very dangerous. Because this true meditation does not have an ego or tribal reference point. That's a very, very important point. It has no reference point about doing it for anything, to get something. Whereas what people are accustomed to is to do things to get something. In other words, having a reference point that can be used to measure progress towards getting it. For what? Usually one of two things that ultimately become the same thing, tribal membership or the ego eye. Seeing into the emptiness of the ego, the arbitrariness of trying to keep sustaining membership in a tribe will help one to let go of the shackles of both of these endeavors and enable one truly to cultivate the true function of Zazen, which is vast and wide, greatly liberating. And finally, allowing the mind to become clear of these Velcro-esque tendencies of the ancient structure of the mind, so that the mind becomes really clear and ready to be aware and to receive what is already around us, already manifesting itself as this, what do we call it? Dharmakaya, nirvana, fundamental being. All these words, they have no meaning because there is nothing outside of them. They have no definition. But they are used mainly for inspiration and to indicate by the preface that says there is nothing outside of it. These words refer to nothing because they don't refer in contrast to something else when we say fundamental nature. It is not in contrast to a non-fundamental nature. So there is no reference point. To live without reference point, to learn to live without reference point, to learn at least to have the option of living for an hour, for 2 hours, for a while, without a reference point, is something that reveals an enormous amount about what is possible for us human beings that otherwise is not within the purview of most folks who live solely with reference point. So we hear this case once again. It all seems to be encompassed by these three bodies. What is it that is not within that, that is outside of that? In this manner, I take heed. Take heed whenever the mind comes up with stuff. Take heed. Not to battle it, embracing it with kindness, knowing it is part of the human condition, but being street smart enough to take heed and not be fooled. We'll end there today.